This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. And again, the Super Bowl buzz is still in effect. Seth Wickersham at ESPN.com writing that this Super Bowl was the greatest of all of them. We have 57 of them, and this one is the best. And it's the best for a couple of reasons, as he pointed out. But I have a big question, and I think it's still something that we as sports fans have got to figure out. And that is, what do we make of that holding call at the end of the Super Bowl? Did it damage what is, for a lot of people, one of the greatest Super Bowls to ever be played, if not the greatest Super Bowl to be ever played? Or does it become part of the legacy of the game that is just remembered as maybe a sore spot, but a sore spot that's part of the overall way we remember this Super Bowl? Because you can have something negative, and if you're a Chiefs fan, it was obviously a positive, but you can have something controversial and still be part of the of something's greatness, right? It can still be part of something that was magnificent, even if it sort of pains a lot of people. We talked about this yesterday, that holding call that allowed the Chiefs to sort of run down the clock to almost a point of inevitability, kicking a short field goal and leaving the Eagles virtually nothing to work with. That changed the game. It changed the game because Kansas City would have had fourth down. There would have been a good chunk of change left on the clock, you know, a little under 2 minutes that Jalen Hurts and the Eagles could have worked with to try to get back into a game that maybe they were down three. Maybe the game would have been tied because maybe they missed the field goal. They had done so earlier in the game. We don't know. But the holding call allowed a fresh set of downs. The Chiefs ran it down to the near the goal line. They stopped short of going into the end zone. They kick a field goal with no time left, and it sort of became anticlimactic. But the performances on the field were so incredible that maybe it overrides that controversy. You talked about two quarterbacks that did just about everything possible to win this game. Really, the only blemish on either quarterback was Jalen Hurts fumbling the football that led to a Chiefs touchdown. But then he just came right back and got 10 unanswered points to have a 10-point lead going into halftime. And as we talked about yesterday, the magic of Patrick Mahomes was that not only was he brilliant throwing the football to the right spots, he was doing it after the whole world saw that he had suffered an ankle injury and dealing with an ankle injury all of the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, if you want to go back to the Cincinnati game, leading into the Super Bowl. So all of that comes together in this magnificent performance by both teams, and especially both quarterbacks. But does that call stain it? Does that call become something that we would love to say, this is one of the greatest Super Bowls ever played? This is the greatest Super Bowl, without being the best thing I saw was the last thing I saw. But the reality of it is that holding call is still not sitting well with a number of people who have gone beyond just incompetence or something that was not correct at the time. They've gone down to the level of conspiracy. Now, as we talked about yesterday, my position on that call has been when the defender says he made the hold, when the receiver obviously said he was hold, when it was held, when the officials and the referees all say they saw it, it's a hold. It should have been called. It doesn't matter time and place, because once you do time and place situational officiating, it becomes pretty dangerous. Ann O'Connor at the New York Post had a really good column about this, but he is arguing that the officials should have swallowed their whistle there, because in the NBA, they do it time and time again. There is sort of this unwritten rule in the NBA that late in the game, when you you're seeing a player drive to the basket, let's say, you know you could blow your whistle, but do you blow your whistle based on time and circumstance? And especially if that player makes the basket. The reality of it is that's a dangerous place to be in, even if officials actually do it. It's not really something that you want organizations to back and support. So if officials want to do that on their own, that's up to them. They can do that on their own. I wouldn't even argue that. If an official notices time and situation, he might go, you know what? I'm gonna let these little things slide. That's up to him. That's up between him and the organization, how they review officials. But I don't want any sort of dictate from leagues, Roger Goodell or Adam Silver or anybody, to come down on officials and saying, you must understand the circumstance of the game. Because now you're manipulating it just simply for entertainment. When in the end, while this is an entertaining thing, in the end, it is supposed to be an athletic competition between two sports teams vying for a championship. And however it plays out, that's the way we consume it. I can go to a movie and it can be the worst movie I've ever seen. And I can say, man, whoever wrote that was terrible. Whoever directed this was terrible. They picked the wrong actors. Those actors were awful. This is absolute on-screen garbage, and everybody that was associated in this is at fault. But in sports games, the unknown is supposed to be what is the entertaining part of it all. The idea that nothing is scripted, that nothing goes down. It doesn't come down from on top. They don't let Patrick Mahomes score touchdowns because it's great for his legacy. And they don't let Jalen Hurts lead the Eagles on an opening touchdown drive because it creates drama and puts the Chiefs in this adversarial situation where they've got to bounce back. Nothing is scripted. That game could have been a blowout. That game could have come down to the wire in the other way with the Eagles taking it down the field. You don't know. It's a dangerous place to be, but it doesn't mean that that call doesn't live in some level of infamy when we talk about Super Bowls. Because it has the potential to do just that. There have been so many championships, and when you look at the history of the Super Bowl, that have come down to close to field goals, right? To touchdown drives, right? We've had a bunch of them. From Joe Montana finding John Taylor to Adam Vinatieri kicking a couple of field goals to Scott Norwood in wide right. We've had so many close Super Bowls that have come down to the last moment. And do we remember every single little detail as to how that occurred? No. I mean, you might remember that, for example, the Patriots beat the Carolina Panthers on a last-second field goal by Adam Vinatieri because the Panthers had scored and they kicked it out of bounds, and that set Tom Brady and the Patriots up at the 40-yard line. You might remember that Joe Montana led the 49ers on a touchdown drive against the Bengals in Super Bowl 23, and it was the John Candy game because Montana saw John Candy on the sideline. There's so many different things that we remember about the Super Bowls. So many little details that we remember. I mean, look, we've had a lot of them, but we've only had 57 of them, right? How many World Series have we had? How many games in the World Series have we had? These are one-shot deals. So we've had 57 of them. How much of this call is going to be remembered 15 years from now? Well, I'll tell you something. I don't think much if the trajectory of Patrick Mahomes goes the way we think. If Mahomes piles on more Super Bowls and the Chiefs become this juggernaut dynasty where he's won five of them by the time he's 35, then you're not going to remember that unless you're an Eagles fan. Those things hang out a little bit longer, right? If you've suffered the real pain as a fan, you never forget those kind of moments. I always said one of the joys of being a fan is remembering the team's failures a lot more than you remember the successes, right? It's just that weird phenomenon. Because the pain of losing close championship playoff appearances, so they somehow outweigh in our brains the successes in the championships. I certainly can remember the Steelers' playoff success. I can remember them winning Super Bowls. But boy, I'll tell you right now, I can remember almost all the details of their failures. I can remember all the details of the times I thought they were going to win and they didn't. So if you're an Eagles fan, yeah, you're going to remember that. But I'm talking about, you know, the casual fan living in Idaho. How much does that call plague this Super Bowl for years to come? Because the reality of it is, like Seth Wickersham writes, that it's the greatest at ESPN Plus. His point was pointing out all of the things that happened in this game on this sort of legendary level. And I remember we talked about this yesterday. When we get a Super Bowl that is very memorable, a lot of times we remember there was one team that didn't quite live up to its billing. But we didn't have that in the Super Bowl. I guess so. We had a quarterback in Jalen Hurts that played magnificently, so much so that you could have voted for him as the MVP, and you wouldn't have had people saying, if you wanted to do the, I don't mind voting the MVP of the losing team. He played that well. Three rushing touchdowns, over 300 yards passing, a beautiful pass on a corner route to A.J. Brown. The one fumble that led to the touchdown, but he responds afterwards. You've got two quarterbacks playing at the highest level. Not one of them is playing an off game. You've got a legendary quarterback showing again why, by coming back from an ankle injury, to score on every possession in the second half. But that call really, really stuck with a lot of people. All right, we're going to talk about that a little bit more as we continue to sort of get our Super Bowl hangover with and continue with that. But spring training in baseball, and oh boy, is it going to be a mess. I'll tell you why coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio with Tony D and Ron Culver.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Yes, it is Valentine's Day, so rock and roll love songs. That's the theme of today's show. Happy Valentine's Day to your loved ones. I know who Valentine is. I know who Saint Valentine is.
Saint Valentine.
But, come on. Is this like... Didn't Hallmark kind of jump on this bandwagon?
I think Hallmark saw the Saint and was like, oh, you know, we could do so much better.
Riding with this.
What did Saint Valentine do?
I know. What did he do?
Did he go around spreading messages of love?
Yeah. I don't know. Did he lure the children of the village with his flute? I don't know. I have no idea. But they remind you early at these stores how Valentine's Day is coming.
Day after Christmas.
As soon as Christmas is over. And they just go, here, don't forget, in a month and a half. And you're like, But I guarantee you, if you walk into a Target or a Walmart or wherever, you're going to see a bunch of men picking out cards.
I don't even know. St. Valentine, it says here, is the patron saint of tourney, epilepsy, and beekeepers.
Okay, so how in the world did he become the... How did he become the love doctor? How did he become the love saint? Where we're now buying chocolate hearts and candies and whatnot. Yeah, find out the myth of or the legend of St. Valentine. I'm kind of curious now how we got to this point where it becomes like one of the biggest candy buying, flower buying, card buying holiday.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything
that is
the correlation between him and love.
See, like, yeah, if St. Valentine was in jail and there was like a love, somebody was like, he lost his love at sea. And then I'd be like, all right, I got it. I got you. But I don't know if that's true. By the way, Philip on Twitter, it's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Philip.
Happy birthday, Philip.
Happy birthday. So it is not Valentine's Day. It's Philip's birthday.
That's right.
Philip in Oklahoma. Well done.
Tell that to my wife.
That's right. That's what I'm doing. Happy birthday, Philip, and happy Valentine's Day.
No, honey, it's not Valentine's Day. It's listener Philip's birthday.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go.
That's why I got you this cake.
I got you this cake, yeah. I woke up in my studio. I had a bunch of little dark chocolate hearts that I got this morning.
That was nice.
So, yeah, that was very nice. As I'm a big dark chocolate fan. So that was cool. But I got my wife whatever's left over at the store tonight. I'm so bad. I'm terrible.
And I was reading an article. I was like, oh, you know, here's some last-minute gift ideas for the procrastinator. I was like, oh, thanks.
Thank you.
One of them seemed really easy. It's like getting chocolate pudding, crush some Oreos into it, and stick a rose in it.
So one Valentine, I know, right? That's awesome.
Like, you crush the Oreos to make it look like dirt. Stick a rose in there. Oh,
that's brilliant. I can do that. Absolutely brilliant. I, 1 year, my wife loves Winnie the Pooh. So I was buying her a card 1 year, and they had a box of Winnie the Pooh candy, like little Winnie the Pooh candies. And I was like, oh, perfect. It was a heart, had Winnie the Pooh on the cover. I was like, this is great. So I buy it, I get the card, go there. So, she comes home and I go, hey, happy Valentine's Day. Yeah, look at this. And she opens up. She goes, oh, my God. And then she goes, oh. And she reaches and she goes, she shows another box of Winnie the Pooh candy that she bought. I said, what's this? She goes, I saw this and I bought this for myself. And I said, why? She goes, I didn't think you would have bought this. I go, what?
Yeah.
I go, what are you kidding me? I was like, that's like the first thing, like.
What kind of
confidence is that?
You just keep it simple. You say, honey, here's the card.
Yeah.
You know, happy Valentine's
Day. Happy Valentine's
from me.
Day. Don't. No more plush animals and all that other stuff.
See, I don't know what to do. Sometimes my wife will buy herself something, and she goes, oh, happy Valentine's Day to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
That never was... buy yourself a Valentine's Day gift?
No, I've never bought myself a Valentine's Day gift.
I did one year. I bought myself the James Bond DVD Blu-ray box set. Amazon was having a deal on all the James Bond movies. It was a beautiful box, and all of them up until Skyfall. So it cut off at Skyfall.
Okay.
And then it had a place for Skyfall. So in the box, it had a space for you to later on when Skyfall came out, you could buy it and add it to the box. And I was on sale, and it was a massive sale. It was a real incredible deal. And I bought it for myself because I'm loving me some me. So that was my Valentine's gift to me. So anyway, happy Valentine's Day to everybody's loved ones.
Except for Philip.
Except for Philip, happy birthday. All right, so we're now moving past where the 2022 football season is starting to fade in the distance.
It's over.
Just like those caught up in the Avengers rap thing, in the Avengers movies, like just disappearing into dust like Peter Parker.
Yep, snapped our fingers and it's gone.
Now we're moving on to other things, and baseball is right around the corner. Now, I didn't know this because I have to admit, this event I pay very, very little attention to, and that's the World Baseball Classic.
Hear, hear.
Maybe I should. I don't know. No one has ever convinced me that this is an awesome thing.
I think this year you should.
I should. Okay.
This year.
Okay.
Because in the past, well, just because I did see the United States roster.
Yeah.
And it's tasty.
Is it good?
It's tasty.
Is it as good as the Dominican Republic? Because they're the favorites to win this thing.
And I think that's why the U.S. roster decided to step up their thing. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so here's the way it worked yesterday, is that players that are participating in this reported to spring training. So spring training's opened up so that players could start warming up for this thing. Pitchers and catchers came in, what players came in, why not? And then later on, other players will emerge. But the problem is this, is that spring training is going to look like a mess. And the reason is because all of these rules that Major League Baseball is implementing, they are putting into right away in spring training. And so now there's going to be this sort of acclimation period while everybody gets accustomed to some of the new rules. Now, some of the rule changes are things that they've done before. For example, the runner on second base for extra innings, they did that over the last 2 years. And now that's going to be permanent. So that's something that they went, you know what? We actually like this. And they got data, which was really important. They got data to show that we are no longer going into this rule is preventing 17 inning games, 18 inning games. We didn't have very many that even got to like the 15th inning. So that was good news for baseball. They wanted to shorten these things. They really wanted to risk, lower the risk of injuries and playing 17-inning games and whatnot. They said, no, this is actually helping. So now you've got bans on shifts. You've got pitch clocks. That's going to be a big deal. Pickoff limits. There's larger bases now that they're going to be using.
Which I'm excited for.
Which I'm excited for. Why wouldn't we be?
Well, you know, the problem is we haven't had a really good stolen bases leader in years.
In years, exactly.
I mean, back in our day, you know, way back in the 1900s.
Yeah.
I mean, we had this one guy who referred to himself in the third person who was arguably the greatest base stealer ever. You probably have heard of him, kids. His name is Ricky Henderson.
He would steal three bases a game.
A game.
Like seriously, like you could watch him in a game steal three bases.
When we talk about unbreakable records,
some games I watch, I don't see one stolen base.
All the time.
Right?
That's why I think he has unbreakable records. I mean, I know we talk about it just recently with LeBron getting his, the 38,000 some odd point. Like, he had 130 stolen bases in one season. We're lucky to find a guy who gets 30.
I know. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, he was amazing. And you need a guy to come up in Major League Baseball that is just dedicated to stealing bases. Just, he's got the speed, he's got the timing, and that's the thing he wants to do. Because Ricky Henderson, what I always loved about Ricky Henderson was when he was on first base, he could tell the pitcher, I'm stealing this base on your next pitch, and they still couldn't get him out. When you release that, I'm gone, and you're not going to catch me. You need a guy like that. You need a guy that is so quick and doesn't care. He's like, I'm going to steal bases all day long. But we don't have that guy. That guy doesn't exist, so maybe this will help. But the other thing, too, is you're going to have – there's another rule where pitchers, they can't keep going off the rubber all the time.
Yes.
And that's going to be a problem because guys love to do that. They love to give
That'll
themselves
be nice.
The reset, get off the rubber, you know, and now they can't. So now they're going to have – so here's the thing. If you're a baseball fan that loves spring training games just to get the feeling of baseball, maybe you live in a winter city, because I used to love it. I used to love those afternoon spring training games. It'd be 22 degrees outside, and I'd be watching some game in Winter Haven, Florida, and it was 75 degrees outside. Maybe you're one of those. You watch to see a spring training game to get the feeling of baseball. It might be a mess. It might be an absolute mess because they have told the umpires in the spring training game, don't be light. These guys have to have this down by the time we get to opening day. So don't give any leeway. Everybody, these are exhibition games. The players are going to need it because if they're not accustomed to this, it could be the pitch clock especially. If you're a batter that keeps stepping out of the box and you forget about that pitch clock or whatever, you forget about it could be disastrous. Absolutely disastrous during the season. So that's what you're going to see in spring training. It's Tony D. Ron Culver as we continue.
Is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh boy, this is going to be a good day. I can already feel it. The softness of this show is kicking in. Which one is this? Is this REO Speedwagon?
Yes, sir.
It's like REO Speedwagon. Air Supply, REO Speedwagon.
No. I promise you, they're not all going to be. This might be the slowest of them all.
All right. Very good.
It won't be. No, I can't say that. The next song will probably be the slowest one of all. But
REO Speedwagon had one of their best. One of their best albums is "You Can't Tune a." You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish. That was the name of one of their albums. So it's my little rock and roll trivia for you, if you want to call it that. Nevertheless. Philip on Twitter, happy birthday, by the way. Stop screwing with baseball. The game is meant to be a marathon, not a TikTok clip. That's basically what they're trying to turn it into. The extra base runner is just dumb. Here, that's a great point, Philip. Here's why. That's a good point. That's the main argument. You just hit on the core argument of where baseball is on the line with, right? Guys like you, me, I don't know if Ron, if you're in this category or not.
No, I'm in this category.
You're probably in this category. There's a traditionalist part of this sport that you don't want to mess with, right? There's a traditionalist part that says, hey, wait, it's this game, don't tinker with it to appease a second group of people that may or may not be part of your future audience.
No, but they're just wanting a result.
Right, right.
And this could be the betting crowd.
But there is also the need of baseball to sort of say, but we are losing generations. Why are we? And can we do something about it? But I agree with you, Philip. It leads to more and more things like this where the game almost becomes unrecognizable. Do you remember we were talking about this? I want to say you and I brought this up in a conversation around COVID. It was a little behind COVID where people were saying, maybe we should play seven-inning games from now on.
Right.
And they were because they were doing it in doubleheaders, right? They were playing doubleheaders that were only seven innings. And some people were saying,
yeah, because didn't Madison Bumgarner had a no-hitter, a perfect game, but
right,
it doesn't count
because right,
it was
count.
Only seven innings.
So
stupid.
People were saying, why don't we do seven innings? Like, why do we need nine innings? Like, is there, you know, why can't we change that?
Why don't we just make it one?
So there was this sort of conversation of why are we losing a generation?
I get it during the COVID season.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
It was, 60 games or something. They were just trying to get something done. And we didn't have a problem with that then. We didn't have a problem with seven-inning doubleheaders. We didn't have a problem with, hey, you know what, you guys are going to be playing a whole lot of games in a short amount of time. Put a runner on second. I got that. Now, you know, and reading it's a permanent thing. I'm not a fan of this.
No, I'm not a fan of it either. The COVID rule manipulation was not supposed to be a sort of a gateway
or if
to open up and change your game entirely.
Now, I've seen this argument, and I can somewhat get behind it, right? Don't do it immediately, right when it goes to extra innings. You know, choose an inning. Say, like, it's, you know, inning 13 or 14.
That's a great addition.
Then you add a runner.
Yeah. If you get to a point where, like, okay, that's a great way to look at that. Because the NFL said, look, we hate ties, right? We hate ties. But we're going to give you 10 minutes of extra time to figure out how we don't get a tie. But if you can't figure it out after 10 minutes, unfortunately, you get a tie.
You get a tie.
And the ramifications of the tie. And you may not like it, but we're not playing football games until 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay, so we're not doing that. NHL did the same thing during the regular season. Obviously, in the postseason, you got to do something different. But in the regular season, they said, we're going to do a shootout. And we'll keep doing the shootout. But we're not going to play 20 minutes of overtime and another 20 minutes of overtime. You want to wait for the postseason for that, where the games go to 2 o'clock in the morning, then you're going to get that. Because those games have to have an ending. But a shootout loss, everybody gets a point, right? We're good. Baseball should say, I think you're on to something. Look, when we start noticing, you know what, two or three extra innings isn't cutting it, then we'll put the runner on the second base. Then we'll start with that because we've now reached a critical mass. We've reached a point where we've got to do something.
We've got to wrap this thing up. Most likely these two teams are playing again tomorrow.
Right. So that's a better way to do it than just sticking the runner on the 10th inning of a game.
Yeah, just automatically 10th inning, put a runner in second. Let's see if we can wrap this puppy up. It's like, no, how about, do it after the 12th. Have them play three full innings. Traditional, because most of the time it gets wrapped up. Very rarely do you see 13th inning, 14th inning.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like, the NHL does do an overtime period, right?
They go,
look, we'll go to an overtime period, and then after that, we'll do something to give people a little bit of closure to this game. And, it's not like baseball's doing home run derby, right? They're like, look, we'll still... But right away, right off the bat,
give it some time. Let them try to win it the traditional way. And then, like I said, after three innings, then if you want to throw a runner on second in the 13th inning, all right.
Because
by that time, I'm ready for the game to end too.
Yeah, exactly. This is the biggest problem. Commissioners have the biggest problem with every generation is a little different, and every little generation, there's something about that generation that you have
pretty
to
pretty soon, it's going to be seven-inning games because, you know what? That's what I played when I was a kid.
Right.
Why are
we
going to nine?
And if you have a young public that's got a little bit of disposable income, so you get this group of people in their 20s, and they're not married yet, and they've got pretty good careers, and you're asking them, would you buy a ticket to LA Angels game? Or would you buy a ticket to a Kansas City Royals game or a Tampa Bay Rays game? And they go, yeah, but man, parking and the game and getting out of there, it's like 5 hours, right? that's then you go, okay, how about this? We shorten everything and we tighten it up and you're out of there in 3.5. Does that work for you? That's what they're going for, right? They're going for, because that is the one thing, Ron, that I will say soccer nailed down perfectly, was their ability to go, man, this is 45 minutes of a running clock with some extra time, and then another 45 minutes of a running clock with some extra time, and there you go. And we're moving. We're moving all the time. It's not like the timelessness of baseball is not appealing to the young generation, mm-hmm. right? We're like, show up at 1 o'clock for the first pitch, and we have no idea when it's going to end because we don't know, and life is grand, and stay all afternoon. And the young group people are like, no, I got things to do. I'm not going to stay all afternoon. I need to know when I'm getting out of this thing. You know, like when I was a kid, my father used to take me to Fenway Park. We used to go to Fenway Park all the time. But we never stayed to the end of the game because we lived 90 minutes away from Boston if on a good drive. My father was like, I'm not staying here till midnight. I got to work the next day. So we would leave, get out a little early. We'd always stop at the souvenir store. We'd always get a little something. Then we'd go to our car and we'd beat traffic home. Now, as a kid, you don't appreciate that, right? Because you don't understand, right? It's like summer, I'm sleeping in. But when you're an adult, you absolutely do. I mean, I can't tell you how many Rockies games I were in Denver. I was looking at that clock going, by the time I'm done with my interviews and my story, I am getting out of here at midnight, 12:30. And I got to be up the next morning to be, you know, at the radio station. You don't appreciate that. You don't understand it, but it is a long game. It's a very long game. Now, I don't really remember leaving early when we went to Celtics games. I don't remember leaving early when we would go to Bruins games. But I do remember leaving early with baseball games because you just didn't know and you didn't want to get caught in this sort of vortex of, my God, it's 10:30. We haven't gotten out of here. It's probably going to be another hour plus when this crowd disperses before we even get to the car and get on the highway. And then it's going to be bumper to bumper traffic and we're not getting in until 1 a.m. For some people, that's an appealing part of going to baseball games. That's a part of the joy of going to baseball games, that timelessness, that it's the only sport where you can go to really, really, where you don't even have to really pay attention to what's going on. You can go for a business meeting. You can go on a date. You can go with a bunch of buddies and not even know what the score is. It's the one sport that sort of says you can do this. But if you're the commissioner, if you're Rob Manfred, and you're looking at sort of where you're losing people and you're really losing people based on time, you manipulate the game and then you sort of anger the people that have been with you the entire time. Pitch clock is the one thing I'm really curious about how that's going to be running. They try all this stuff in the minor leagues and apparently it's worked in the minor leagues. And they just, once you get used to it. Now the one, I'm
ready
for the pitch clock. Now, yeah. The one thing that I don't
and
like.
And robot umpires.
Robot umpires, I want. The one thing I don't like, I'm going to stand by this, and I don't care who's arguing against me. I think that banning the shift is a mistake. I don't like it. Because I think that defensively, you should be able to do whatever the hell you want. You want to move everybody over to the right side, then the left side's wide open. You want to move everybody to the left side, the right side's wide open. I know that hitters have a tendency to do this and pull hitters, etc. Mm-hmm. But that's up to you to change your offense.
Listen, the great hitters would never have a shift put on them.
Exactly, exactly. So be a hitter that you want, just like what you said.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Yeah, it's going to be one of those mornings. You said you wouldn't play sappy songs, and now we got more sappy songs.
No, I said this might. This, I think this might be the last one. I don't remember what I chose.
That's true.
I just threw a bunch of love songs in there.
Love rock. Didn't all the 80s bands do the power ballad?
Yeah. These guys were late 80s, early 90s. What I like about this band is that they were almost like borderline, they were heavy metal, almost as like death metal.
Yeah,
and
right.
And this is what we remember them for.
Yeah, I know.
I couldn't tell you.
All of these artists, like some of them had, they're like, ugh. We had to do the one power ballad.
Because everyone was doing it.
Everybody was doing it. And so we did it and it became the biggest hit that we had. And we didn't really want to play it, but we had to play it.
And then that's the one that everyone requests at our concert.
Yeah,
we want
exactly.
to just, you know, smash guitars and fling our heads back and forth and give us you know, concussions.
No, play You'll Love Me Forever. Ugh. Play When the Children Cry. Ugh. Yeah, exactly.
So I think Motley Crue. Was it Motley Crue that did Every Rose Has a Thorn?
I was Poison.
Poison.
Yeah.
They nailed it.
That's right. They nailed it. They nailed it. Well, I had this theory years ago. I think I might have shared this on the show, but I had this theory about rock and roll and NASCAR drivers. Did I ever tell you about this? I'm going to tell it to you anyway.
I think so.
I'm going to repeat this. So I had this theory about, I had this correlation between 80s rock bands and NASCAR drivers transitioning from the 80s into the 90s. So in the 80s, you'd had all of these rock bands where the rock stars looked and acted like rock stars, right? So you had all of these guys with the big hair, and they were marrying like the Victoria's Secret models, and they were trashing hotel rooms, and they were always getting in trouble, and they were living the rock life all the time, right? So it wasn't like they were home raising their kids, taking their kids to ball practice, you know, attending PTA meetings. And then on the weekends, they were getting all the hair and makeup and all that. No, they were that way 24 hours a day, right? Then what happened in the 90s? Here comes grunge, and those guys look like guys in your neighborhood. Right. They were just wearing flannel shirts and jeans, playing guitar, and they just looked like regular people. They didn't have the vests with the spikes and the hair and the makeup and looking like women and all that stuff. They were just a bunch of guys like, yeah, we got drums and some music and here we go. So there was this transition. And I thought to myself as I was when I got into this business and I started covering NASCAR, I started noticing that there were two kinds of drivers. This is where I made the correlation. There were these old-time race car drivers they looked like race car drivers. They lived the race car driver life. They were around mechanics. They were around garages. Their dads were race car drivers back in a time where you had to know how to build your own car. They worked in garages. Like I said, some of them were part of a family that hauled moonshine through the North Carolina mountains, right? And that they sort of encompassed everything you would think a stock car driver would be. Right. Dale Earnhardt, Adam Petty, Kyle Petty, Adam Petty, his son, who later passed away, were part of the Petty family. All of that. Even Rusty Wallace, Sterling Marlin, Mark Martin, like Morgan Shepherd, all of these NASCAR drivers. And then like rock music, there was this switch and it kicked in when Jeff Gordon came in. Because Jeff Gordon didn't look like a race car driver. Jeff Gordon looked like a kid from your neighborhood that his parents were like, I think go-kart racing would be fun for him. And then he just turns into this race car driver. Next thing you know, you had all of these drivers that came into NASCAR, like Jimmy Johnson and Kevin Harvick. And just the list goes on and on of guys who were raised in all parts of the country who got into racing and didn't carry sort of these Southern moonshine mechanic roots, even though they were very efficient with cars and they knew cars and all of that. But there was an image that they had, which was, yeah, we look like a guy you'd grow up with. Like we look like a guy that played baseball and basketball in high school. And also raced cars on the weekends. Whereas you could tell like Dale Earnhardt when he was growing up, even Dale Earnhardt Jr., they were going to be race car drivers. So that was my correlation between NASCAR drivers and rock and roll, is that these transitions from what this image was in the 80s to what it was in the 90s are almost completely different. There was it was actually a behind the music on this, and it was on Nirvana. Maybe it was an MTV documentary. I can't remember, but it was on Nirvana and grunge, you know, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, all those groups. And there was a guy who was in Dokken. Remember that group, Dokken? The 80s,
yeah.
he was saying how that they had a manager And he said, our manager told us there was a period of time, it was this little gap in time as the new music was coming. He said, we had a manager that told us to stop buying hair products and makeup and all that stuff. Just go in a different direction. He said, the music industry is shifting. Get rid of all the props. Get rid of all the show. Just be what you look like and go on stage and play. And they fired him. They fired him and they told him, you're an idiot. No, we need more hairspray. We need more music. We need more makeup. We need more pyrotechnics. We need all of that. And he goes, that guy was 100% right. He goes, that guy was 100% right. And that guy went on to manage Nirvana and other bands. He just saw the trend and he tried to get that group to buy into it. So, yeah, so that got me on my rock and roll tangent, because you're right. Those power ballads were the one thing that these guys had to do as part of being a rock and roll star of the 80s. Big hair rock of the 80s was the power ballads. So we're probably, is that what you're saying? We'll probably hear a bunch of them throughout the show today?
Well, no, I think that might have been the last power ballad.
Oh, well are we going to get like other hard rock love songs this morning?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be better.
Yeah, we're sticking with the Valentine's Day theme. I, you know, just trying to choose songs that will spark a memory.
Right.
That's always my goal.
When you were young, what was the best concert you went to?
When I was young.
When you were young, like a teenager. Like, did you go to any concerts as a teenager?
Not many. But I did. I mean, I always like to tell this story because I think it's funny. I remember going in to Tower Records, right?
Yeah, right. Those were great.
Back in the day, there were these stores where you go and buy music.
Oh, man, those are the best.
And I was going into Tower Records because I wanted to get the new Def Leppard album. I believe it was Hysteria.
Hysteria, sure.
And in the parking lot, a radio station was there, Kiss FM, which is was a huge radio station at the time. Rick Dees was.
I was going to say Rick Dees was at Kiss FM, right?
What's his name? I think Ryan Seacrest is the morning host of that station now.
I think he got hired for that, yeah, for that station.
But they were there, and they were setting up a stage, and they had a little booth going on, and I didn't know. I was like, oh, who's playing? And, you know, talking to a radio guy there. I had to be like, I don't know. I was a junior high kid at the time. And I was like, who's playing? They're like, New Kids on the Block is about to play. And I was like, who are they?
Oh, wow.
And this is back, you know, when they still couldn't do, like, concert venues. They had to do, like, almost like the mall tour because they were underage. And they were doing a parking lot in Los Angeles.
You know what? That reminded me. Somebody pointed out on Twitter, they go, just a reminder, Rihanna did a parking lot show in 2006 and for a New York Red Bulls soccer game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I supposed to make out of that? She was a struggling young artist learning the ropes of the business? Like, you just told every band's story since the history of music.
I mean, that's what it was. I had no idea who they were. I mean, within a year, they became like probably one of the biggest music artists.
Yeah, they all start, you know, from somewhere.
Everyone,
they're all doing.
Like, I remember all the girls in my junior high had NKOTB either on their hands, on their book covers, written everywhere.
Amazing.
NKOTB, I'll never forget. I even had that thing signed in my yearbooks. From junior
really?
High. Yeah. Like for girls, like, keep it KITT, you know, keep in touch. And then it was like, you know, NKOTB, just to remind you that I'm a huge fan.
Just wanting to let you know I'm a fan of something you may not be a fan of. I should have done that in high school. I should have done Go Steelers. I should have put Go Steelers on everybody's yearbook for no reason at all. They're like, who are the Steelers? My favorite NFL team, but you'll get it.
Yeah.
You'll get it.
You'd be really great if you were like,
football.
Go Supersonics.
Right, exactly. That would have been great. Yeah, if I had done that.
Go Expos.
Yeah, that's right. Go Expos. Go Supersonics. Yeah, that's even better. That's a great point. Go Oilers.
Oilers.
That would have been even better. People looking at the yearbook 30 years later going, oh, boy.
Oilers. Oh, I haven't heard
Oilers.
That name.
I haven't heard that in a long time. Long time. All right, it's the Valentine's Day edition of Wake Up Call. Coming up, back to the Super Bowl, and which team is more likely to be back in the game next year? Well, there's a lot of issues with one team. We'll tell you about that coming up. And we'll continue to look at not only the NFL offseason, but some of the players that are on the move, including one that's going into isolation. Oh, boy. Hour 2 coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.